Choice and Control, a podcast celebrating people with disability. In this season, we're talking about access, inclusion, and the National Disability Insurance Scheme. This podcast series is brought to you by Carers Queensland, NDIS local area coordination partner in the community.
Hi, I'm Jodie van der Wettering. For author, academic, and developmental educator Barb Cook, life really did begin at 40, because that's the age she was diagnosed with autism, ADHD, and phonological dyslexia. Today, her work focuses on supporting other adults on the spectrum to reach their potential in life, career, and self-development. But it was a long and fairly winding road to get there.
Life to young Barb was a very interesting one. I was very fortunate in the sense of I was left to my own devices. In that sense, I had the opportunity to grow in sort of like my own environment. So I would do things like I would spend a lot of time in my own headspace. I would be fascinated by rocks in my garden. I would sit, we had a driveway where I'd sit down and I'd just like so interested in that sort of stuff. My parents, they were very accepting of who I was, so they let me do things in my own way, and I was very, very much caught up in my own world as a young Barb. And as I got older, things started to change a little as I got into sort of like the high school environment. I started to really realise I didn't fit in with the rest of the people and my peers around me. Everybody else was sort of like getting interested in boys and doing things like that. And I was still interested in my rocks and collecting. I also collected key rings. So I have lots of key rings and stamps and collecting Barbie dolls. I was very much into that sort of stuff too. Not to play with, mind you. Mine was a sense of having them in the air on display, check them out in their boxes, pull out ones, put them back in. And so they basically stayed in their little tombs for the rest of their lives on my shelf. And so these sort of things started to become very apparent as well. So other interesting things for me, young Barb, have to have things, everything in their place. So I would have at the end of my bed this lovely vinyl red bin bag with all my stuffed toys. Every toy had its place and had to stay there. If anyone went missing or got moved and put in the wrong place, not happy Barb. I would absolutely have a meltdown over it. I would get upset if anybody else touched them. And it was like, that was the same with a lot of different things. I was very, needed everything in its place because it gave me a sense of sort of like control of my environment, you know, knowing where everything was. So anything that was unexpected really, really stressed me out.
And then getting older, coming into adulthood, what was the process of getting diagnosed and finding out you were on the autism spectrum?
Well, the process of getting diagnosed, I didn't get to that point until I was heading up to 40. I had a lot of struggles through my life with anxiety and depression and feeling because I couldn't fit into the society that was around me. So I had a lot of jobs that I would be at for short term. Things like doing the work itself would be great. I had no problem with that. I always was commended on how well I would do a job. But it was the people that I actually struggled enormously with. The social dynamics of, chit-chat about, oh, we're going down to the pub, or have you heard about so-and-so's done this? Never interested me. For me, it was a case of, we're here, we've got to do the job, we need to do this. And other people didn't like that. They looked at me and I would get called things like I was stuck up, the people thought I was better than them. But it wasn't like that, and I could never see that in myself. It was a case of, this is what we're supposed to do. Why are we not following these rules? So after a lot of jobs that I went through, and I also was a graphic designer for quite many years, so I also freelanced as well, I really wasn't coping well. And I pretty much had a breakdown when I was about 37. And so I ended up being on sickness benefits for a couple of years. Because I just could not cope with doing anything anymore. I couldn't understand. I was tired of trying to work out how to fit into a society that just didn't seem what, you know, it wasn't for me. I thought, have I come from another planet, as they say quite often, because I feel quite alien to everyone else. And it was only fortunately through my partner. I was looking up something because my partner is also on the autism spectrum. And it was always different too. And I happened to be looking up on the internet one night and come across Asperger's syndrome. This is at the time about 2008. And I looked at all the criteria and I went, oh, this is definitely him. But while I was doing that, I'm going, this is definitely me too. And so from that process, I started learning more about autism women. And there wasn't a lot of literature even back then, which is only 12 years ago. I read some books on from Leanne Holiday Wiley, Pretending to be Normal. That book resonated enormously with me. Just her life story of growing up and not fitting in was pretty much identical as well. And I also read Jen Perkins' book as well, and that as a different type of normal, different kind of normal part of that book. And these all really hit home about, they've had the same life as I have. So this helped me investigate further. So I went off to the psychologist to tell them in great detail, this is what's going on. And I didn't get diagnosed with autism at the first time. It was a case of I got misdiagnosed with a mood disorder and social phobia. And so I was like, but I don't fit that criteria. I don't fit these different things. It still didn't seem right. And so after some time, I was fortunate at a lifestyle well-being sort of little workshop thing they had in the small town I was living in. And there was a doctor there that was very different to everybody else. And I sort of like was absolutely mesmerised by her because she tripped across the stage to come and talk. And I was like, she's clumsy like me and she does all this different stuff. So I ran up to her and go, very proudly, I've got all these things wrong with me. And she went, no, you haven't. You're not. She says, come and see me. So she was a local GP. And she sent me off to a psychiatrist that actually understood ADHD and autism in adults, because quite often it's always in children that they tend to look for all these things. They tend to think, we don't grow up and have autism when we get older. And it was through that process of that I got diagnosed at that time with Asperger's syndrome, ADHD and dyslexia, which I also did not have a clue I had that as well, about difficulties with reading.
And that must have been so challenging, looking at you now as an author and an advocate and an academic, to find out you had that particular challenge that had just gone completely undetected for so long. Because as you said, you were nearly 40 by this point.
Yeah, well, I was a very different person to what I am now. So back then, I didn't have the strategies, I didn't have the supports, and I didn't have the knowledge of my own neurology and how to support myself in different situations. So over the years, it's taken quite a few years to take a big step back and look at what was of value to me, and the sense of I've got to stop being like everybody else, stop trying to fit into something that's not working for me, and sort of create a pathway of finding a way what worked for me. And so these were things of understanding how long I could handle social situations and meeting up with people rather than forcing myself. And that would lead to more overwhelm and not coping, and it would impact on everything else that I was doing. So it was through these processes of turning things around, and also the things of even only 3 years ago with the Spectrum Women book, it was a case that there still wasn't enough information out there from the life experiences of autistic women. So I wanted to bring that together along with the research and the clinical perspective as well. That's where we brought in Dr. Michelle Garnett, who is wonderful in giving an insight from two different areas. So it filled a very significant gap in what we did. And because there was 14 of us that did this, it wasn't just one person's point of view. It was lots of different people's points of view. So it wasn't biased in that sense. And because we all lived in different parts of the world too. So we're in Australia, it was the US, Ireland, Germany. So it was all different places, this information that all resonated with each of us that came through in that. And also at that time, I then started to embark on studying at the University of Wollongong to do my master's. Well, originally it was a graduate certificate in autism studies, but then it changed over to a Master of Autism in Education. And I was very fortunate there too that my lecturer and professor understood autism incredibly well. So I had the supports in place to help me get through my studies. So having these things in place and people that actually understand and support you really does make a huge difference in turning things around.
When you were first diagnosed, or when you were figuring out who you were and how your brain worked and getting to know yourself as being on the spectrum, was there a bit of maybe anger or sadness around, all my life I've been trying to play by the rules and be normal, and all the time I've had these challenges that I wasn't warned about, I didn't know I had?
Interesting, no. I wasn't angry. I was actually very, very relieved. It was a case of, oh, good, there's an answer for all of this. It took a huge weight off my shoulders. So I wasn't angry. It was a validation going, yeah, you're okay. You're not broken. You're not defective. It's just you think differently. Some people do experience anger at the because they've had so many challenges and been such a major impact. Why haven't I had these supports? And they will feel like, what do I do with my life now because of the age I am? So I quite often hear this with people, especially middle-aged women, saying about, you know, I can't do these things anymore. I'm tired. I'm burnt out. So if there's that anger about what has happened in my life. But what needs to do is try and turn that around, because we still have lots and lots of years ahead of us, some quality years. It doesn't matter what age it is. It's a case of, yes, it's okay to sit in these particular points for a small amount of time, but don't stay there. Start thinking about, right, let's turn this around. What am I going to do for me? The rest of my life is all about me and stuff everybody else.
So could you talk us through what you're doing now to work with other people on the spectrum and get them into that good place of looking after themselves?
So what I do these days, I'm called a developmental educator. So what that basically is, it doesn't mean I work with children, because every time everyone hears that, oh, you work with kids. No, I don't. I work with adults. So I do a lot of things in helping across the lifespan is developing skills that will help and support you. So these are things about understanding where your strengths are or where you may have some challenges. There's things like, you know, goal setting and vision planning, and let's map out where you want to go with your life in that sort of thing. So we build on everything, the strengths-based approach and person-centered approach that I look at. So we work together and work through different situations. I also do a lot of work in the employment area. That's one area I'm very, very passionate about, and especially with young adults going from school, transitioning from school and into the workplace. That's where we really need to give them a lot of support in knowing what type of career do I want to do? What sort of job is going to suit my neurology? Let's understand what's about the workplace that you may find challenging that you might not realise until you get in the workplace. And also from the perspective of working with the employer, getting them to change their perspectives of about having true inclusion in the workplace, because quite often it's not that. There's quite often this, I will do a little bit, but they're not actually truly listening to the person that's working there, what might support them. And quite often it doesn't cost a lot of money to make these changes. It's just a bit of a thought. Let's have some communication about what's going on. We might just need to rearrange how the office looks. And it's not hard to do. And quite often when you look at that, it's just not for that individual. The whole workplace can benefit from having these open discussions about what works for everybody.
And the whole workplace can benefit from some of those accommodations. You don't need to have a sensory processing disorder to benefit from quiet spaces or breakout spaces or understanding your sensory needs and those of other people in the workplace.
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly what you say. We all have different preferences and things. You know, I know lots of typical people that really don't like crowds, or they're introverted or they're extroverted. They do like crowds. So you look at in that sense of just not the the office place of where you're working, but also the environment of the type of job. So your neurology, you might be sort of like, okay, I want something that's different all the time. So quite a lot of us also, apart from autism, will have ADHD. So it's like something like 70%, I was reading in research. So some of us would like the regimented routine and that sort of stuff, but we also like to mix it up too with, you know, with something different all the time to stop us from feeling bored at work and that sort of thing. So you'd go off and go and look into a career, say maybe like as a firefighter or a policeman. So it's giving you that sense of justice, because many of us are very moral driven and justice driven. So that's a really good example of like, okay, I want to do a career that's exciting, so I'll be a policeman, but I've also got a sense of justice. I've got a regiment in what I'm doing and the standards that I have to give across it. It's a really good understanding of all these sort of stuff that we can do.
And understanding that people on the spectrum aren't all going to be computer programmers, that you can have such a wide variety of talents and strengths to be anywhere really in the employment field.
Absolutely. That is such a myth about IT. We're all going to be IT and geeks and that sort of thing. No. There's a lot of different areas that we're in. So there's the arts, there is environment sustainability. I have met a lot of people that are in environmental science And the land care and caring for what's about us. I mean, a good example is Greta Thunberg, how passionate about climate change, because we're very passionate about what we do, and things, as I said, with the environment, but also with animals as well, working with them, because we connect really well with them. Animals understand us better, I reckon, than humans sometimes. There's lots of different areas we can be involved in. And so, like, from my own life experience, growing up, I was passionate about art. I loved drawing all the time, but I was also a scientist as well. So I was quite interested in analysing everything I could find. So I brought that together of going, okay, I like my science part, I like my art part. And I did also like doing computers, but not as in being a tech or anything, but using software to be creative with. So I brought that all together. So that satisfied quite a lot of different areas.
So what's the research you're doing now working with adults on the spectrum?
Research. So there's a couple of different things that I've been involved in. One of them was, and I'm still involved in, was with the US. Autistic adults and other stakeholders working together or something like that, engaged together, sorry. And that was started in 2017. That was my pathway of getting into research, invited to be part of community council. And through that, we worked in finding out the gaps in mental health and also in how research should be conducted. So from the end of that product of that research, we brought together and created a guide for researchers. So it was a case of how to approach it. So look at it from our perspective as autistic people. What do we want research rather than the researcher choosing what they want to research on us? And the other thing was, is also in that guide, which is a compensation guide. So what compensation should you give people that are involved in research? So that was a really good outcome from that. And there was a couple of papers that we published as well through that. And that was on the mental health side as well of autism and how the rates of suicide and different areas in that and how to listen to the autistic voice about what we want in mental health and healthcare. So that was a really good project. And then through the University of Wollongong for my studies, we got a small grant to start a project on facilitating building the voice and self-determination of young autistic adults. So this project is about, we've brought together a group of people as a community of practice. So this has got autistic people, it's got professionals, it's got parents, it's got all the different areas that's coming in to talk about how we can support young adults in determining what they want to do with their lives. And through this project, we're now sort of like, we're still in the very early stages, but it's great in how we're working towards an understanding what is beneficial, how do we get this information out there, and how do we get people talking about this.
What would you like the future to look like for people on the spectrum and for society as a whole?
Everyone deserves to have a happy life. Everyone deserves to have the same opportunities as other people, in the sense of being able to get work, to feel included in the workplace, to have the opportunities to get the supports that they need, to get the education they need, and to have some sort of independence that works from as well. It's really just a simple model of the human rights of what we're all really should be valued for who we are.
So from your own experiences and from your research, what advice would you give for young people on the spectrum?
Follow your dreams. Do what you're passionate about. Don't listen to what other people tell you and don't follow the crowd. Be happy to be your own unique self. So if your ideas and your passions stand out very different from everybody else, go for it, because that is what's going to make you happy. Don't follow the crowd and go, oh, I just want to fit in with them and everything like that. Because quite often in the end, it's not true to your heart and true to your visions and passions. Because as we get older, those people, especially if you're at school and that, our friends and peers change as we grow and get into society. So if we can start early in the sense of going, it's okay to be me and to be uniquely who I am and follow that, you really are setting yourself up for success and happiness.
Thanks for joining us at Choice and Control, a Carers Queensland podcast. For more information about Carers Queensland, the National Disability Insurance Scheme, or the local area coordination program, please contact us online at carersqld.com.au. Or you can catch up with us on Facebook, search for Carers Queensland NDIS. This podcast is a place for people with disability to share experiences, stories, and achievements. If you have a story you think we should know about, please contact us through the Carers Queensland Inquiries line at 1300 999 636, or email cq.inquiries@ndis.gov.au. Until next time, thanks for listening.